Argument is United States versus Langford. Mr. Davey.
May it please the court, I'm Bill Daisy. I was counsel for Christopher Langford of the district court, represent him on appeal. As the court is aware, the case comes on for review on direct appeal following a guilty plea which reserved the right to raise a challenge to the district court's ruling on a motion to suppress. That motion to suppress forms the sole issue raised on appeal. We argued before the district court that on four levels the search was unreasonable within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. First, I suppose in order, we direct the court's attention to the affidavit. I would argue, and I hope by most standards, the court would conclude that the affidavit submitted by Detective Luke Schmidt in support of a search warrant was pretty bad. The question becomes, was it so bad that it did not establish probable cause to believe that contraband might be found inside the resident searched? The answer is yes, it did, by whatever standard, establish a reasonable probability that contraband would be found in the residence. The court's attention is directed to the omissions that we claimed both to the district court and argued to this court that Detective Schmidt made, or those facts that he failed to
disclose. Why do any of these things matter? In the core of the affidavit is the disclosure that drugs were found in multiple garbage bags outside the residence. And the inferences that came from inside. Probable cause. What's left to do?
I disagree, Judge, and I'd say this. There's less than just about a gram of marijuana debris total among the garbage bags that were retrieved, some of which apparently go back to November of 2000 on a search that took place in March of 2001. And I disagree that a small amount of marijuana found in a trash implies that there's more marijuana in that house.
What's wrong with the inference? If you find discarded cigarette butts in somebody's trash, you infer that somebody in the house smokes cigarettes, right? If you find discarded milk cartons, even though there's only a tiny amount of milk, you infer that somebody in the house drinks milk, and so on.
But I argue it's not reasonable to conclude that milk is still in the house.
No, but it's fairly reasonable to conclude that there's more milk in the house. The milk that was thrown away isn't in the house, but unless there's a sudden change in the behavior of the people inside, that they've stopped drinking milk, then there's going to be more milk in the house.
In fact, the best evidence would be if the milk bottle found in the trash were full.
Yeah.
Right? That would suggest people didn't like milk, so they bought it by mistake, so they threw it away.
Somewhere buried in the testimony that Detective Schmidt had to offer was the notion that both his unnamed, possibly reliable, but we don't know why, informants noted a lot of traffic coming and going from the house. Detective Schmidt noted a lot of traffic coming and going from the house. Detective Schmidt knows there's three people living in the house. Why is it reasonable to conclude that the person that drank that milk is an occupant of the house, let alone the Chad that the focus of investigation has fallen upon? And about whom the rumors of milk drinking have arisen, particularly if there were teeny little capsules of milk. You know, why is it reasonable to conclude that someone other than a casual visitor to the house or its backyard or somewhere drank some milk and tossed it in the trash, as opposed to an ongoing milk-drinking conspiracy contained within the house? I have six children, and they range from ages 23 to 13, and every time one of them has a birthday, they go camp in the backyard with all their friends, and I put two trash barrels back there. And it's at some level, it bothers me a great deal to think that if one of my children has been the target of some rumor on the street about milk drinking, or marijuana smoking for that matter, or marijuana dealing, and in my trash from a conglomeration of kids who had a birthday party is a discarded marijuana roach that I place trash side. To conclude that I could find myself one morning with a flash bomb going off in the backyard, a policeman entering my front door with a battering ram, ordering me and my wife out of my bedroom at gunpoint, unclothed, going through my papers, my personal belongings, looking for the source of this elusive roach. I do contend, and I continue to contend, it is not reasonable to conclude that there are drugs inside that house from a small amount of marijuana discarded in the trash. Combining this with the notion that the officer well knows there are three other adults living in the home, the affidavit is presented so as to create the appearance that these factors contained from the trash bear some relation to Chad, from whom he's or about whom he has received these rumors of drug dealing. But I argue and continue to argue that the appearance of probable cause is diluted by the omission of the fact that other people live in the house. I mean, if I go back to my kids having their party in the backyard, does everybody in the household lose their rights and the protection under the Fourth Amendment because suspicion has fallen upon one member of the household? And again, under that same analogy, had the affidavit been presented and the issuing judge was only told about my middle daughter living in that house, the rest of the family was ignored completely. The middle daughter lives in the house, the middle daughter is rumored to deal drugs, and we found a roach in the ashtray. Is it reasonable under the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution for this search to take place? Does it seem a little easier to swallow because the targets of this search were tattooed ex-felons who didn't put their garbage out very often, apparently every 6 months or so? The constitutional principle should remain the same. When we the people decided we wanted some protection from unreasonable intrusion, it was the rights of the people that we chose to protect, and it's the rights of the people that we inserted in the language of the Fourth Amendment, not the rights of houses. I suggest that the affidavit did not support a reasonable probability, and that there's a roach in the ashtray, there's probably marijuana in the house, so go search it, what's the big deal, is not a precise analysis of what went on. It is inconsistent with the spirit and the intention of the constitutional protections we all hope we enjoy in the privacy of our homes.
Hey, the affidavit included something about the holster and bullets?
It did not, but there were holsters, and not bullets, but a holster and an empty clip.
If that had been included, would that have improved the affidavit?
It might have some bearing on the knock and announce issue. And in fact, it does have some bearing on the knock and announce issue that is raised, the appearance of an empty holster and an empty clip. But no, I say not, because the object of the search was drugs. I don't think, had it been included in the affidavit, that an empty holster and an empty clip were found in the garbage, that it would add in any way to a determination of probable cause to believe that narcotics were to be found within the house. My white light is on, and with the court's kind permission, I'll reserve a few moments for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Days.
Thank you.
Mr. Arnold.
Good morning. Wynn Geelong for the United States.
I'm puzzled, but I've been puzzling over this so-called drug ledger. You say in your brief, this ledger was fairly characterized by Schmidt as a drug ledger. And I don't know, you have the two columns on the left, adds up to $1,475 and $3,400 mysteriously added, and on the right, apparently someone left out $850, so that's added into all that, getting $57.5. What is the indication that this has anything to do with the drug business?
Your Honor, I think it has to be taken in its context, that is, having found evidence of drugs in the trash.
No, come on. Now, that's ridiculous. The trash is the trash. It's, you know, whatever they care, whatever they don't need anymore, they throw out. Now, so these are a bunch of people, right? They're unrelated people living in the house. So presumably they have to allocate and rent and so forth. So what reason is there to think that this has anything to do with drugs rather than with how they allocate rent or household expenses or utilities or what have you?
Well, there I couldn't say on its face, Your Honor.
Okay, off its face. I don't see anything that connects that. It is troublesome because it seems that without your drug ledger, all you have are the drugs in the garbage and the unidentified informant. And maybe that's enough, but you put a certain amount of weight on this so-called drug ledger, and
well, I think there
I don't see anything in these numbers that points to drugs.
Your Honor, I guess below, Judge Tinder as well relied as well in this court's opinions in Soto and Duarte describing what the description from the opinion sounded extremely similar to exactly what appears on the face of this record, fairly characterizing them as
what are you talking about? What is it? You tell me what it is in this document that suggests drugs.
Well, Your Honor, the rounded numbers.
Or ledgers.
Rounded numbers?
Yeah, I think it's not unusual. It's typical that drug amounts are dealt with in very rounded numbers. There are large numbers.
No, it's rent, right?
And that is certainly true, Your Honor. I think I would emphasize what Judge Tinder emphasized in his order was that Detective Schmidt certainly disclosed exactly what this was on its face in the affidavit. While he characterized his drug ledger, he also, Judge Tinder found, characterized it and described it exactly for what it was in the event that the issuing judge...
It still sounds like complete nonsense to me.
I don't see how one could characterize it as a ledger. Characterize accountants' work papers as ledgers, even though accountants' work papers are a lot more formal than this post-it note.
If that's a
drug ledger, then Arthur Andersen should get the Nobel Prize for his work on Enron.
Of course, that is a typical description that narcotics detectives use for any document that they think could indicate keeping numbers.
This business is becoming completely fictionalized. Look, what is the theory that Mike, Bill, Tyler, P, and Jeremy, and Room are what, customers, and they pay these amounts for drugs? Is that the idea?
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly the idea, and I would only emphasize that to the extent that Detective Schmidt described it that way, he also disclosed exactly what it was. He did not embellish the description Judge Tinder found. He also disclosed that another ledger or a piece of paper with numbers was appeared to be a gambling ledger. Or a list of gambling debts, and Judge Schindler went on to note that there was...
Well, how do we know this isn't a list of gambling debts?
We don't know that, Judge.
Well, what's the difference between this and the gambling debt ledger?
Well, but the gambling debt ledger actually disclosed, or on its face, listed names of teams, and appeared much more like spreads, so it was clear on its face, pretty much that was a gambling ledger. There is nothing like that on it, and you don't know that. What Judge Tinder found was that it was not recklessly misleading on the part of Detective Schmidt to characterize it the way he did. He disclosed it for what it was, and if the judge had any questions, he certainly could have asked Detective Schmidt, well, what exactly does this mean? May I see it? Let's talk about it. The judge found that the issuing judge was not a rubber stamp in this process, but there was no evidence of that. And that Detective Schmidt, on the face of the affidavit, disclosed this for what it was. The other ledger, I think,
your description of it is kind of amusing. You say, other than providing the issuing judge with a copy of the note, Schmidt could hardly have described the note in much greater detail. In fact, the only information revealed on the face of the note are names and numbers. So in other words, you're saying there isn't anything Schmidt could have said, drawing on his experience and training and so on, to make someone believe that this actually was drug records of some sort.
Yeah, from the face of it, Judge, although I think Detective Schmidt did explain.
The face of it, but you say there's nothing Schmidt could have said. In other words, he has some completely inarticulable experience that enables him to say these are drug ledgers, we're calling it, but does not enable him to explain to anybody else why he thinks that.
I don't think that's completely accurate, Judge. I do think that in his training experience, rounded numbers with names listed, and I guess I'd submit, Judge, that it has to be taken in context when he has other information that there is drug dealing going on in this house, that this is the kind of thing that one often finds along with that drug dealing. Now, standing alone, obviously this would never have remotely supported probable cause, but when linked with a baggie found with the number 500 written on it, with residue of marijuana, with the informants who had said that someone named Grayless was dealing drugs out of that house, a receipt in that trash in the name of Chad Grayless. I would emphasize, to emphasize the thoroughness and the balance, I think, of Judge Tinder's order, perhaps more importantly, in finding for the government in this matter, that he noted that, for instance, that the defense had attacked that the Schmidt had not disclosed the prior date, the earlier date, several months earlier, on the Grayless receipt. But in the same vein as the milk cartons, in fact, Judge Tinder noted that it would have been more troublesome if, in fact, the Grayless receipt with another address on it had been dated more recently. In fact, it was dated several months earlier, the fair inference being that now, in the meantime, Grayless had plenty of time to move to this house. The odds that two informants would identify Grayless as dealing out of this house and finding a receipt in the trash in Grayless's name is a coincidence, or the fair inference was, in fact, that Chad Grayless lived there. That is in all the context in which Detective Schmidt had reason to believe that drug dealing was happening in this house, he understood that this list could be a drug ledger. Now, is there anything inherent in it? Of course not.
But doesn't Mr. Daisy have a point? If a couple of people don't like someone, all they have to say, tell the police, you know, these people are dealing drugs, and then the police go nosing around in the garbage. And, of course, there are a lot of people who are not dealers but are consumers of illegal drugs, millions. And so then they launch this tremendous raid. Now, in this case, of course, their hunches and so on were correct. But isn't there a substantial probability of mistake in a situation like this?
Well, Judge, I think the government said from the outset, and Judge Tinder certainly, again, to emphasize the balance of his opinion, noted this was a thin probable cause. If it was based solely on the amount of residue found or evidence of marijuana in the trash, would that be sufficient? I don't know if there are any cases that hold that. Judge Tinder certainly cited several cases from other circuits that have said just about that is all is sufficient, but there was more in this case. Standing alone, those things were not particularly significant or sufficient, but taken as a whole, all the circumstances, they did lead to more than a conclusion that there was a party and had just recently been a party in the backyard and someone had disposed of marijuana. This court has never held that. I'm not asking the court in this instance.
I don't think how the fact that the party at which marijuana is smoked shows that people, that the people, the hosts of the parties are dealers.
Well, I agree, Judge, and I don't...
What's the ratio of marijuana users to marijuana dealers in the United States, do you think?
Well, it's large, I'm sure. 100 to 1?
I have no idea. I assume it is large. Yeah.
But in addition, there were the two informants, one the day before, who had said that someone named Chad Grayless or Chad was dealing drugs out of this house. The receipt in the trash confirming or certainly corroborating the information that Grayless lived there. and marijuana found in trash. Those taken together created a probability that under the totality of the circumstances that evidence of a crime would be found in that house.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ong. Mr. Daisy, you have anything further? How much time? Just 1 minute?
I'll watch for that light. Thank you, Your Honor. I would say this. I gave Officer Schmidt every opportunity to explain why that note was a drug ledger, and it's set out in the transcript, and it's referred to in the briefs. Its statement was it's got a name next to it and an amount, which I'm assuming is money next to it. And I would say it doesn't take a defense lawyer to have gone looking for this aspect to begin with the statement in the affidavit being names and numbers believed to be ledgers for dealing in narcotics and betting on different sporting activities. That's a red flag, to anybody. And I was, wait a minute, how can it be some fine melange of sporting, betting, and narcotics? And it led me to look at them, and it certainly led to the argument that's before the court, that this wasn't a fair statement of what he found in the trash. The comparisons of what happened to what's in the affidavit, I think, are significant from beginning to end. I launched my investigation March 23rd, 2000. He didn't. He started in December 2000 and started looking for garbage back in December of 2000. I think it's significant that when he gets to his informants, the individuals, significantly he's saying, I believe they said they were familiar with these people. I don't know if he had ever seen them with drugs outside the house. I know earlier you asked me if he had been at the house. I don't know. But outside of the house, I'm not for sure. I mean, looking specifically at what these informants, these persons, were all about, it is idle rumor. At least from the record, I think the court should conclude that the individual statements were nothing more than idle rumor. And what was heard on the street, I thank the court for its indulgence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Daisy. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
And the court thanks you for your vigorous defense.
My pleasure.